It's August. Say again, August. Where has the summer gone? Yeah, it's hot now, but pretty soon we'll have cold and snow and, well, the fall and winter movie seasons. Always something to look forward to, am I right? Hi, I'm Dan Webster, host of Movies 101. Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I are checking out the dregs of the summer season, which this week means three more releases, only one of which features, surprise, surprise, blockbuster action. That, of course, is the sci-fi offering Guardians of the Galaxy. We also have the James Brown biopic, Get On Up, and the Canadian comedy, The Grand Seduction. So don't touch that dial, because Movies 101 is coming up next, right here on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.
Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokane7.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, full-time law professor at Gonzaga Law School.
And I'm Nathan Weinbinder, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio and staff writer for the Spokesman Review.
And welcome to Movies 101, the show that doesn't really care what season it is, because inside a movie theater, it's basically always the same temperature. Besides, it used to be that good movies came out only during certain times of the year. Now movies come out pretty much all year round, though the good ones still are few and far between. Three new movies drifted into the Inland Northwest last week. One belongs to that pop genre, the musical biopic. Get On Up tells the story of the godfather of soul, James Brown. Guardians of the Galaxy is an adaptation of the Marvel comic about a rogue group that becomes what the movie's title suggests. And The Grand Seduction is a love story, though the lovers are a remote Canadian village's residents, and the object of their affection is the town itself. Let's please, please, please begin with music. It happens every generation. Entertainers come along who offer something new and who in the process profoundly affect all those who follow. Such an entertainer was James Brown, a.k.a. the godfather of soul and the hardest working man in show business. Tate Taylor, who wrote and directed the 2011 film The Help, tells the story of Brown, more or less, in Get On Up. We learn of Brown's hard childhood, his struggle to find an expression for his musical talent, his first years as a hitmaker, his trouble with bandmates, with women, and ultimately with himself. Working almost as hard as Brown himself, Chadwick Boseman, last seen as Jackie Robinson in the movie 42, does an amazing job. Overall, though, Taylor's film is waylaid by a screenplay that can't decide on what point of view to adopt or even whose story to tell. Taylor himself wastes the talent of skilled actors, Allison Janney, just for one, and features the work of a hack such as Dan Aykroyd. So the fault ultimately for this mess, and that is what Get On Up is all Taylor's.
I don't understand what your problem with Dan Aykroyd is.
Oh, God, he's terrible. Come on.
But he's barely in this movie. I don't even know
what
if he bears
he's barely
much.
In this movie?
He's probably
in
for about 20 minutes of a 2.5-hour movie.
In a very central role. He's the guy who's used in Get On Up as the guy who shows James Brown the way of the business, you know, which actually is factually untrue.
Well, but he's not the problem with the movie. Dan Aykroyd is probably the least of this movie's problems.
Yeah, right, exactly, I agree.
I don't know if this movie is as much of a mess as you suggested Dan. I thought it was kind of intriguing, even though I didn't particularly like this movie all that much. But I thought a lot of that had to do with Chadwick Boseman's performance, which, as you suggested, is, I mean, it's full of energy, and it's a lot of fun to watch him take on the different stages of James Brown's career. And there are moments in the film where I did kind of find a new appreciation for this guy, even though I walked into the film.
Chadwick Boseman or James Brown?
A little bit of both. Even though I walked into this movie already as a huge fan of James Brown's music, and it was good to hear all of those songs too. So, has that going for it. I think my problem with Get On Up, though, is that I think Taylor is trying way too hard to be esoteric. He's trying way too hard to break down the conventions of a biopic. So he jumps around all over the place. One scene will be,
thought he was Terrence Malick here.
Yeah, he was trying to do something like that to try and
Don't even bring up the name of Terrence Malick. That's like saying, James Franco, come on!
Well, he's trying to do something different and new, and I can see what he was trying to do here. it'll start, you know, somewhere in the 1960s where Brown is at the peak of his stardom. Then it will hop back to when he's a child and his family is breaking apart. Then it will hop forward even further into the 1980s when he's struggling with drugs, which the movie really only hints at. And then there are hints, too, of Brown's, the fact that he beat his wife. That's only hinted at. Yeah, and only two of them are in the film.
Yeah.
And they only hint briefly that there was any kind of domestic violence going on there. So that was really strange. And I think another problem here is that this film was approved by the Brown estate. So there's no way that they can really get into the nitty gritty of who James Brown actually was. So I think there are some good things in here. And when the movie deals with the music itself, the scenes in the recording studio, the actual performances, which are a lot of fun. And I really like the scenes of young James Brown, which sort of have a strange otherworldliness to them. It's kind of a combination flashback dream sequence. I like that stuff too. But the whole thing doesn't hang together. It is sort of a mess, but I guess I just didn't dislike it as much as you did, Dan.
Go ahead, Mary. Pat.
Get On Up starts out so oddly in some respects because it focuses on a traumatic drug-fueled incident, we believe, late in James Brown's life. And it just sort of pulls you off center and you never really get back in the groove in some way. I mean, was that done to prepare us for all the sequencing forward and backward and so forth? Or
I think so. I think it was. And I actually kind of liked that approach. I don't know if it quite worked, but I sort of liked the attempt to try and, you know, maybe start us off on the other foot rather than a normal biopic.
But that's what's so interesting, because I had the expectation that Get On Up was going to be more, I guess, thorough in terms of presenting the multifaceted sides of him. And that's why I thought that that whole scene was somewhat disingenuous, because it shows us a troubled side of him, a bad side of
and
him.
And then it doesn't really follow up.
Right,
on that.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. And then we Absolutely. Never get back to that at all. And then that seems pretty incongruous. I think, Dan, I would have to agree with you that I think that there's a major weight talent here that's wasted in this movie. At the same time, I was enthralled by Chadwick Boseman's performance, and to see him roll over his biographical chops from Jackie Robinson to this, I mean, I think he's definitely, you know, a notable young talent. And I love the boys. There are twins who played the young James Brown when he was growing up, and I thought that they were very touching in terms of their performance.
Yeah, but what we're talking about are bits and pieces of this film. First of all, we're talking about
a
Chad
movie that's
Boseman.
Made up of bits and pieces. I mean, that's kind of the way that this whole thing is structured.
And that basically is one
and that's
of
your
the
problem
that's
with
one,
it.
No, it's not the problem, it's one of the problems. All right, let's run down the problems. First of all, if you want to learn about James Brown, go back and check out any one of the documentaries or parts of documentaries that showed the real James
Brown.
And
if you want the essence of what he did as an artist, just pick up any of his albums.
Exactly.
The Live
exactly.
at the Apollo album that he put out in the early 60s is a great document of who he was as an artist and
right.
why he's important.
I'm sorry. If this is your introduction to James Brown, it's not a bad introduction, but if this is all you take away, I'm sorry, you're sadly lacking. You do not understand James Brown.
Yeah.
Second, this is a PG-13 movie. All right, it's way too polished. It's way too Steven Spielbergish for my taste. James Brown was about soul and about
funk. Oh,
come
on. If Spielberg was given this material, he would give it way more edge than this.
I
Even Spielberg would
still,
give this edge.
But still, it's in that school of filmmaking, and it needed to be tougher. It needed to be sweatier. It needed to be rougher.
Well, it needed to deal head on with the darker aspects of James Brown's life. I mean, see him hit his wife one time and it's in the background of a shot. I mean, that's not really dealing with that particular side of his personality.
Let me give you one example of what I really think is the problem with Tate Taylor's making. He films a couple of the concert scenes, one particular one in which he shoots the whole thing as if he's shooting a musical documentary. Now, if you are shooting a real musical documentary, Martin Scorsese's done it, Jonathan Demme has done it, what you do is try to capture the event. It's important for you to show not only the music, the people on the stage, but to show the audience reaction, the real reaction of real people to what's going on here, because you're capturing everything. Taylor does the same thing. He uses the same method to show. He keeps cutting to the audience, which is actors acting as if they're reacting to a fake James Brown. So he's just layering.
They look like extras trying to get on camera.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's people you don't even recognize. And it kept pulling me out of the film going,
why should you recognize the members of the audience?
Why should I care about these?
Because
you cut to the audience the way you do at the final scene, one of the final scenes in the film, when you see his friend Bobby Bird and his wife and the reactions they're having to what James Brown's doing on stage. It has a dramatic effect. Otherwise, it's just wasted. It's just, look what I can do. I can do what Jonathan Demme did. Real. And it's wrong-headed. It's dumb. It's dumb filmmaking.
Well, if there is one good concert scene in Get On Up, because I think they're a little bit better and a little more kinetic than you're giving them credit for. Not that they're necessarily great. I'm just having to defend a movie I wasn't even that crazy about. There's a scene, it's right after Martin Luther King's assassination, and Brown is performing. There are armed guards right at the side of the stage, and all of these young black men are trying to get up on the stage and dance, and he actually has a moment where he stops music and talks to them and tells them to have some respect and let him play, and that's a really good
scene. Exactly. Well, two things about that scene. One is that scene, all the attention is on James Brown, mm-hmm. and the audience members are shown mostly from the back, so there's an effect
but
there.
They're, and they're also a part of the dramatic
and
drive
the second
of the scene.
Thing is, the movie never says that James Brown insisted on being paid before he went on stage, does it? Yeah,
no,
there's a lot of
the
little things
wouldn't
that,
allow that.
No, of course not. Of course not.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think the issues in Get On Up of domestic violence, of drug use, of illness. Yeah, but they're so veiled and
they're sketchy.
Know, right, exactly. Yeah. And I think that it would have been a much stronger movie if we had been able to see James Brown writ large. And maybe because of Nathan saying the approval aspect of this. You know, I mean, he really had a fascinating life. I mean, he was a semi-pro boxer, I think, at one point. So even what we see, I mean, we see the way he abuses his friends and pushes people away and so forth. But I'm not even sure that captured the way that he treated other people, maybe as a result of his childhood trauma or whatever.
We need to point out Nelson Ellis's Bobby Bird. He was superb.
Very good.
But I began wondering, is this movie about James Brown or is it about Bobby Bird?
I actually liked what Taylor did with their relationship, even though there were elements that were really sort of glossed over. For instance, he basically betrays his band and becomes a solo artist, but then Bobby Bird is back in the next scene, and that's never explained. But I do want to say that I think Chadwick Boseman's performance here still deserves acclaim, even though it's in a movie that doesn't quite deserve it. I mean, he's playing James Brown over the course of, 40 years?
Yes.
And he's convincing all the way through. It's just too bad that he didn't have a stronger biopic to really allow his performance to thrive.
Yep. And that was Get On Up. This is Movies 101, and it's time to take a short break. But before we go, remember that you can access podcasts of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to look at Guardians of the Galaxy and The Grand Seduction. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
Fellas, I'm ready to get up and do my thing.
Go ahead.
I want to get into it, man, you know.
Go ahead.
Like a sex machine, man.
Yeah.
Moving, doing it, you know.
Yeah.
Can I count it off?
Go ahead.
One, two, three, four. Get up.
Get on up.
Get up.
Get on up.
Stay on the scene.
Get on up.
Like a sex machine.
Get on up.
Get up.
Get on up.
Get up.
Get on up.
Stay on the scene.
Get on up.
Like a sex machine.
And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discussed the James Brown biopic, Get On Up. Let's now move to our two other releases, the sci-fi adaptation, Guardians of the Galaxy, and the Canadian comedy, The Grand Seduction. Let's begin with Spaceman, Zoe Saldana in green, a talking raccoon, and a root man named Groot. Conceived in 1969, then rebooted in 2008, Guardians of the Galaxy is an updated version of a classic tale about a group of misfits that comes together first to fight a common foe and then to become what the film's title suggests, a kind of Magnificent Seven, even though this group comprises just five, an earthling pirate, a female assassin, a talking raccoon and his tree-like humanoid pal, and a muscle-bound sociopath. Boasting a joke a minute and a comic turn by the Lego Movie's Chris Pratt as the displaced Earthling, a Han Solo type who calls himself Star-Lord, Guardians of the Galaxy is a refreshing change from your standard taking-itself-oh-so-seriously superhero flick. But you know what? Seriously, if it comes right down to it, I can't really figure out. I'm still trying to work out why Guardians of the Galaxy works so well, why I liked it so much, because it doesn't seem to do anything special. It doesn't seem to do anything different. The story's there. The stock characters are all there. It's just that maybe it's because it doesn't take itself so seriously. And I laughed all the way through.
I think that has a lot to do with it. I think the sensibilities of Guardians of the Galaxy are what keep it from being just another Marvel blockbuster, of which we've seen, what, 24 in the last 3 or 4 years? And look, I have a problem with the Marvel mold in general. I think all of these movies are sort of cut from the same cloth. They all sort of have the same personality. There's not much that differentiates one from the other. And even the good ones are hampered by, you know, some kind of weak plotting, or the characters, as you said, are a little bit stock. And I think even this movie, as much as I liked it, because I think it's terrific entertainment, the plot is really inconsequential. I mean, there's not much there. There's a villain that's barely developed. He's not really a threat at all. In fact, I can barely remember what he looked like or who he was played by. And it's Lee Pace. Who's a really good actor. But there's a lot of fun little quirks in Guardians of the Galaxy, and I loved these five characters at the center. They're basically like the poor man's Avengers, mm-hmm. which is what I loved about them. And there's sort of a Star Wars scrappiness to this film.
When I use the Magnificent Seven trope to compare it with, it's actually ironic, because what they're defending is not a poor Mexican village, but NovaCorp.
And I like the fact that they're giving these characters that normally would be on the fringes of a film like Star Wars and making them the heroes. You know, it'd basically be like if you gave Chewbacca and C-3PO their own movie and let them, you know,
I would have preferred that, the dark side.
Yeah,
I like this movie too, surprisingly,
which is a total surprise,
because you know how it's I feel about it really is a first. Yeah. And the reason why I liked it is because it was self-deprecating, because the hero, I mean, in all of these other movies, I feel as though the heroes are so cardboard cutouts of, you know, all good with some like dark, you know, side or whatever.
They get like this, the square jawed,
right? Exactly, and it's like the Captain America phenomenon.
You guys leave Thor alone, okay? Leave him alone.
Okay. At any rate, I like the Peter Quill character here. I thought that in terms of portraying it, Chris Pratt did a great job. I mean, he looks totally different than we've seen him in other roles.
He's real buff, isn't he?
Right, right. Well, that leads me to another point. Somebody needs to feed Zoe Saldana. I'm sorry, because, you know, she's not superhero material, because you would, like, touch her and she would fall over.
Well, we've seen her in blue in Avatar, and now she's in green. So what color do you think is next?
I don't know. Red.
I think red or yellow is definitely coming up.
There were so many lines during this movie that I laughed out loud, too. And that's unusual, because
it's not radio friendly.
Right. And the thing is, these are coming from comics. I guess maybe they're now graphic novels, but it seems to me that there should be a comedic edge to them. And that's what this offers that almost all of the other movies do not. So I think that, like, the Raiders of the Lost Ark analogy does seem to be the most apt one, because there we have a hero who, you know, has some real talent and some skills, but doesn't necessarily take himself too seriously. And that's what this film benefits from. So I was very pleasantly surprised.
And we can't overlook Bradley Cooper as the voice of the talking raccoon, or Vin Diesel as, "My name is Groot.
I am Groot.
I am Groot."
That's all he says.
Groot. That's right.
And that's the thing, is things happen to these characters and they're put in situations where we actually care about the outcome. I don't know if I necessarily cared about the outcome of the entire plot, but I cared about the characters at
the
center.
Because you knew what was going to happen.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that that's what makes Guardians of the Galaxy a little bit better than your typical superhero fare. It sort of has this gee whiz, you know, 50s serial kind of energy to it. Mm-hmm. And that goes along way. I mean, you could give these characters a slightly better script, I suppose, because the one that they have here isn't that great. I mean, it's going through the motions.
Badly, I thought. I mean, that whole scene with his mother,
You know, it's just going through the motions, and a lot of it has to do with Chris Pratt at the center of this movie, who does a terrific job, and I'm glad, you know, I've been an admirer of him for a long time, but he's usually not in a starring role, and so it's nice to see him actually get a chance and to really do a good job.
Yeah, my question was, I just Michael Bay'd out, you know, and so have I been beaten into submission by Michael Bay and the other Marvel films.
And I think that this movie, hey, this might be a test. If you got rid of all of the action in the movie, actually, you might have a better movie, because I think the strength of Guardians of the Galaxy is all in the characters. And in just
which is probably why I like
just the scenes of them sitting around and talking to one another and hanging out, I think, are the strongest points of the film.
No, I agree. And many of the asides, you can hardly hear. They go right past you like
it's a very quick film. And a lot of credit should go to director James Gunn, who this is his first big Hollywood film, and he co-wrote the script as well. And he brings a lot of energy and good humor to this film.
Totally agree.
And that's what makes it work.
And that was Guardians of the Galaxy. Let's close with The Grand Seduction. Ticklehead is a remote Canadian harbor village that once depended on fishing, but with governmental limitations has devolved into one large welfare party. Central to the situation is Murray, played by Brendan Gleeson, a man not above cashing not just his own welfare check, but that of a dead friend. I think it was a dead friend or a brother or a father or somebody. I never quite got that. Facing one last chance at rejuvenation when a petrochemical recycling company considers building a plant in Ticklehead, Murray leads a movement to snare the contract. His main job? Attracting a doctor, Taylor Kitsch, to call Ticklehead home. Following similar films boasting cute citizenry, Waking Ned Divine and Local Hero come to mind, The Grand Seduction has its charms, minor though they be.
First of all, I was confused for the first 10 minutes of the movie about where this was located, because as soon as you see Brendan Gleeson, you see water, I thought this was
Ireland,
off the coast of Galway somewhere. Yeah. And lo and behold, I finally figured out when they started talking about St. John that it was in Canada. And maybe because it's the director's home country, I should have figured that out at an earlier point. Yeah, this film is just too cutesy. I mean, we heard a lot of commentary when we were walking out of the film. It's currently at the Magic Lantern. You know, people were saying, oh, that was so enjoyable. It was really adorable. And it is all of those things. But it's just one of those sort of pieces of fluff that you wish could have, would have, should have been more in some way, because it's very pleasant. And if you want to get a little bit of air conditioning and some good beverages and so forth, maybe you'll want to go head over there and check it out.
No, I don't even think this is worth the air conditioning. This isn't just fluff. I mean, this movie practically flies away. I mean, it's not altogether a terrible movie, but I just thought the cutesiness became unbelievably cloying after a while. I mean, this movie has one joke, and that is this small provincial village. Or they're not a village, they're a harbor, excuse me, semantics there. They have to convince this doctor that he has to stay in this town. So they design it, they find out what he likes, they listen in on his phone conversation. Yeah. The whole thing had a mean-spirited vibe to it. And, they find out he likes cricket, so they pretend that they all like cricket too. That's the one joke
that anchors this movie down. Joke, and I love the scene of all the guys in white on the cliffside. That was at least visually stimulating.
Yeah, it was pretty. There were a couple laughs here and there, but this is basically a sitcom, and you know exactly where it's going. When you saw the pretty lady who worked in the general store, who seems to be
the only single mistress.
Is that what she was? I wasn't paying attention to that part. She's like the only single woman on the island. Boy, who do you think she's going to wind up with? The Grand Seduction this did not work for me at all.
You know, other than the cutesiness, the one real problem I had is the way that the whole thing is shoehorned into a happy ending. I mean, we totally ignore the fact that these people have all been welfare, totally ignore the fact that a factory is coming to this little town, and it's obviously going to change everything. We totally ignore the fact that, as you talked about, Nathan, there's this mean-spirited nature that is just forgiven, you know, just in the midst of a heartbeat.
In one line of dialogue,
exactly.
Yeah.
I'm more in the camp of Mary Pat. If you're in for an hour and a half of just pleasantness, go see this. But at the same time, you might want to check out another movie that's playing at the Magic Lantern this opening this weekend, and that is Whitey, The United States of America versus James J. Bulger. That is a stunning documentary that definitely needs to be checked out. And that was The Grand Seduction. And this is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster, and earlier in the show, Nathan Weinman, the Mary Pat Truthart, and I discussed Get On Up and Guardians of the Galaxy. Let's take this moment to thank Patrick Claussen for both producing and engineering the show. And we thank you to our loyal listeners, and we invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again try to seek out the best new films. Until then, remember, as James Brown himself once said, the one thing that can solve most of our problems is dancing.